Birth Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to Indie Birth series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth. Today we have a very special guest. All of our guests are special, but this one's particularly special, I think, for the listeners that frequent these podcasts. We're going to be talking today about cesareans, and in particular, a specific type of cesarean, and a really cool organization that this woman has come up with to support these special women. So today I have Jessica Teiterman, a very dear friend and fellow midwifery student from Special Scars, which is her organization. Hello, welcome to our podcast, Jessica.
Hello. I forgot to tell you, it's actually Teiterman.
Oh, Teiterman. I'm sorry. That's like me with my last name, too.
I totally understand. Yeah. It's okay.
I apologize. So there we go. Jessica Teiterman from Special Scars. So let's see. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with your story and kind of get into how you came up with this group? I think that would maybe be a good place to start.
Sure.
Yeah.
My first birth was just a typical hospital induction, no big deal. Had my baby, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was miserable, but, you know, it's a hospital birth.
Hey, that was my first story, too.
And then my second one was another hospital birth. My water had been leaking for a couple of days, and I finally called my doctor, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And she's like, well, come on in, we'll check you out, you know. And they tried to say that I was having a fever, but I don't know if I actually had a fever because I didn't check my own temperature because I didn't know any better. Sure. And they ended up inducing me because I was not in labor by any stretch. And my daughter ended up in a very bizarre brow presentation. Mm. So that ended in a cesarean because brow presentations just don't work. Sorry, I have a train.
You have a train.
And then my third daughter, she was a very active baby. And for the last probably 6 weeks of my pregnancy, every week she was in a different position. Mm. She was breech, she was vertex. She was breech, she was vertex. Every week, back and forth. Mm-hmm. And when I went for my 39-week appointment with my obstetrician, she was breech again. And my doctor said, oh, I don't know. I can't do a breech feedback. I can't let you do a breech feedback. You know, she's getting too big. There's not enough room for her to flip again. You know, we just need to schedule a cesarean because I can't do a breech feedback. Mm-hmm. And not knowing what I know now or anything any better than what I know, I was like, oh, okay, you know. And because she totally played the, you know, you're getting so big and it's hot. It's almost summer. Mm. You know, we can just be done. Mm-hmm. Let's just be done. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. Oh, brother.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, how many women feel like that at the end of a pregnancy anyway?
I know. She totally played on my emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in hindsight, it was frustrating for me, too, because my first daughter went beyond 41 weeks. My second daughter was right around 41 weeks. Mm-hmm. And this is at 39 weeks we're having this conversation. And right. I'm thinking, you know what, she's still got 2 more weeks before she's going to be ready to come out. Right. But I fell for it, and I let her schedule the cesarean for about 5 days later.
Right.
And we went in that morning, and, you know, they did the whole prep thing, and when she started the cesarean, I was watching in the rim of the light. I didn't have a mirror up, but I could see enough in the rim of the light over the bed that I knew what was going on. And when she made the first incision on my uterus and all the water gushed out, and then I saw this little hand pop out, and I was like, oh, hi, baby. And I was like, oh, shit, that's not going to work. Mm. You know, because I knew that meant she was laying sideways across my belly.
Yeah.
And so the doctor started resting. with me and the baby. And she tried to turn her vertex, she tried to turn her breech, she tried to turn her anchor out of that low transverse incision, mm-hmm. and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Generally, when you have an incision that is the same pull as the baby,
right?
You know, like right along their back, that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So just logistics. Mm-hmm. It is. It's just pure logistics. There's just, but it also tells me that my daughter was in the process of flipping again.
Sure.
And had we waited a few more days, she would have been vertex again.
Right.
Of course. If anything, that cesarean taught me patience.
Oh, I'm sure.
Let's wait till the baby decides to have, like, you know, go into labor and be born, because the baby knows what position it wants to be. And let it decide.
Sure. Yeah, that's a really, I'm sure that was a really good lesson, but good for other women to hear too, you know, that, you know, we do create, we do create more issues when we don't allow things to settle and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, and because then, you know, I'm still watching in the room of the light, and my doctor, I had to listen to my obstetrician have panic attack over me because she couldn't get my baby out, which was awful.
Oh God.
And then she paged the attending doctor, whoever was on the floor, mm-hmm. and he couldn't come because he was doing another birth. And she had a student standing there watching, which was not a pleasant experience either, but that's a whole nother story.
Right.
And she had to ask him to step away from the table. I think she asked for one of the nurses to come and try to help her get some leverage.
Right.
She paged the attending doctor again. He still was busy and couldn't come, so she was on her own. And apparently she had never been in the situation before,
mm-hmm.
judging by her level of panic. And then I finally watched her do the vertical incision in the center of my low transverse scar going up so that she could get a hand in to get the baby and swoop her out one way or the other. I still don't know if she got her breech or vertex, but there was something there and it went away.
Wow, you Sorry. Don't hear that every day though. You know, I think even that alone, I mean, this is a very complex experience for you, so I don't mean to undermine that, but you know, how many women out there think that a cesarean is just really simple and easy and, you know, it's the safest option for themselves and their baby and no big deal. They just, it's over in 10 minutes and there's never, or, you know, aren't issues frequently and certainly not this issue of not being able to get a baby out. I mean, that's, you know, who would know that?
We do.
Yeah. And that's so valuable, you know, for women that are considering just the obvious, which is, you know, going under the knife for no good reason, really. Gosh, that's frightening.
And one of the things that I have recommended to women since my experience, you know, if you are going to opt for an elective cesarean, mm-hmm. have them do an ultrasound right before you go under the knife so they know exactly what position the baby's in.
Right.
Because if you still, it still counts.
Sure.
It still matters.
Yep.
If that baby is not in a good position, don't do it. Just wait.
Yeah, just wait. Because that's great advice.
Still, it matters. Yeah. If you have a transverse baby, you're going to end up with a vertical scar. Either they're going to tear you while they're trying to get it out of that low transverse, or they're going to have to cut you.
Mm-hmm.
Either way,
mm-hmm. No, totally.
That's on your record. It's like a life sentence, you know? It's on your record forever.
Yeah. So for those people, you know, who don't know this already, I think you've already hinted at it at least. But the low transverse incision is, you know, considered, I guess, the most common, right? And sort of the safest mm-hmm. to attempt a VBAC and for just general healing.
It has the lowest risk.
And the lowest risk. So tell us more about like the percentage of women that end up with like a special scar, and maybe tell us what a special scar is.
The special scars are pretty much anything other than a low transverse,
okay.
and there are so many. Okay. We have the myomectomy scars, so anybody that's had a fibroid removed, mm-hmm. that scar could be anywhere in the uterus,
oh, wow.
anywhere.
Gosh, I didn't even consider that.
Yeah. those are, and it can be any depth. You know, if they only just had to go through one layer or maybe part of the myometrium, which is the middle thick layer, then, you know, it shouldn't really pose that much of a risk, but still, it's unknown. Right. You know, they don't know for sure what it's going to do. Sure. The rupture scars, which we have rupture scars that have been all over the uterus. Mm-hmm. Uterus, they can rupture wherever. It doesn't sure. necessarily have to have anything to do with the previous scar.
Sure.
All of the vertical scars, we have the low vertical, a regular vertical, mm-hmm. which could be anywhere, sure. you know, and then the old-fashioned classicals, which the way that they're noted in surgical reports now, if a doctor says that he used a classical on a woman, it probably is not the original definition of a classical.
Oh, okay.
Because those were almost completely in the fundus, in the top part of the uterus.
Oh, okay.
And now they're mostly, they try to keep them as low as they can.
Mm-hmm.
but if it's, you know, if it's preterm or if the baby was very, very small, then it might be higher up than, you know, the lower uterine segment.
Mm-hmm. So what percentage of women having cesareans are, you know, getting these kind of sort of odd placement of, you know, incision?
We don't know for sure. Nobody tracks that. Mm-hmm. It was suggested in a book called Natural Birth After Cesarean. They suggested 5%, but I have no idea where they got that number from.
Mm-hmm.
5% of all cesareans are special scars.
Okay.
So I don't, like I said, I don't know where they got that number from.
But in your experience, I mean, obviously you came up with this organization, Special Scars, after your experience and in mm-hmm. your daily interactions and all that. I mean, of course it's anecdotal, but like, what are you seeing? Like, are there just tons more women sort of coming forth with these experiences? Like, what are you hearing from women?
I don't know. We've only touched a very small percentage of the population.
Right.
So I can't even guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing it's probably more than 5% of all cesareans,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how much more, because I know that there are, I think there's about 400 women. I think we might be up to 425 in the Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
who have all had some kind of special scar.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we're only touching a very, very small percentage of the total population.
Sure. I mean, gosh, it's like any area of birth, I'd imagine. I mean, first of all, women have to know that they even have one. And that might sound mm-hmm. silly, but I think there's probably women that have no idea, you know, what happened.
For sure.
Know, they haven't seen
There's
it.
A lot of women that don't know until their next pregnancy.
Exactly.
And then their OB looks at their records and says, oh, well, yeah. you can't be back because you have this J or inverted T or this upright T or, you know, whatever. Because little extensions get made fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And they never tell you.
Right.
But the big ones, I mean, the bigger ones or the scarier ones, the women almost always know immediately because they can feel the panic in the room and they
sure.
know something's going on.
Sure.
Or their doctor will come to them an hour after they've had the surgery and say, oh, your uterus was so thin, it just shredded right under my fingers.
Oh,
and,
dear. Yeah.
Oh,
gosh,
brother.
I've heard that one a million times. Or not a million, but,
right?
you know, lots of times.
Yeah.
Lots of scare
yeah.
tactics. Well, and that's
yeah.
obviously, you know, I think why we're talking today is to get the word out about there being this group for support. So when women do find out, you know, and their doctor looks at them in horror and says, oh, God, no, you're not going to be able to have a vaginal birth. That this is a great resource because you went on to have a vaginal birth, right?
I've had two.
Yeah, two. And just, you know, going over your site, tons of articles about things to consider. So I really enjoyed that. I mean, you know, I think you're one person and that's awesome, but hearing other people's stories as well and the information you're providing there for things to women, for women to consider, is something they probably didn't even know was possible at first.
Yeah. We get a lot of women and they will come to us and they'll be like, I had no idea. Everybody has told me that I'm absolutely crazy for even considering it. Mm-hmm. You know, considering the idea of having a vaginal birth after whatever awful cesarean they had. And we're like, no, you're not crazy. Either you are and you're in good company, or we're all not.
Right. So how
we haven't decided yet.
Oh, right. Well, you know, that kind of goes for all of us, I think, in this little world outside of the mainstream box where we just don't believe everything we're told. So how was it for you? I'm just really curious. I'm sure people would love to hear your story. You know, so you had this special scar. Obviously, you got pregnant again. And I mean, what set you off on, you know, I'm going to investigate this and I'm going to come to a place where I feel like this is the right choice for me? What got you there?
Right. I have always been rather bullheaded. I don't know if you know that about me.
That's a great quality. I love it.
You know, I don't always just say, oh, okay, when somebody tells me what I should or shouldn't do.
You question things.
So, yeah, I do. Yeah.
Number one ingredient to owning your birth, question things.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, at first when the doctor told me that I would always have to have a cesarean, I didn't question it. And it was a long time before I got pregnant again, and I got pregnant on accident. I wasn't really intending to, so I was not prepared for it at all. And when I... and I actually had gotten divorced and remarried, so my new husband had no idea what all this meant. Sure. You know, he had never been through a cesarean. He didn't have any kids at all, so he didn't have any clue what anything meant, you know. So I kind of had to coach him a lot and explain everything. And
maybe that's a blessing, huh? I mean, who knows? I guess it could be both.
I think it is, because a lot of the husbands or fathers of the special scars babies are terrified the next
time. Oh, God.
And they're like, honey, I really just. Anything is so as long as you're both alive.
Sure. Sure. Nothing else matters.
And they don't get that there's so many more risks with the cesarean than there are with attempting a natural birth. So I got on the main Yahoo group, and at the time, I was just looking for for family-friendly cesarean, because I just didn't want to have another awful cesarean experience.
Sure.
And a couple people messaged me and said, hey, you know, you don't have to have another cesarean. And I'm like, but you don't understand. I have this inverted T. You know, there's a vertical on my uterus, you know, and it's 8 centimeters long, you know, which is fairly long compared to most of the other special scars that I've... women that I've talked to. And they're like, but no, really, you know? And, you know, one woman emailed me, she had had a very high transverse, scar because her first obstetrician let a student do her cesarean and didn't correct him when he started cutting way too high on her uterus.
Goodness. Holy cow.
And yeah, right. And, but she found a doctor that would let her try to labor, and she had a wonderful hospital VBAC. And then somebody else messaged me that they had, I don't remember what theirs was specifically, but there were a couple of other people that emailed me privately and said, my best friend did this, or I did this, or whatever. And I'm like, well, okay, maybe we can do this, you know?
That's awesome. I love hearing about that kind of community, you know? It's like we don't have that necessarily in our own local towns anymore, but it's one great thing the internet does is just connect women like that have similar stories and, you know,
absolutely
encourage each other.
So I knew that none of the doctors in my area were going to let me even try. Because I live in Toledo, Ohio, and it's very conservative medically, and, you know, we're lucky they don't all have V-back bands entirely.
Right.
So, I started calling around to the home birth midwife to see, because, I mean, I had never even considered having a home birth. I didn't know anything about having a home birth.
Wow.
And I was really disappointed at first because they weren't returning my calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you guys, come on, just talk to me and then tell me no. I don't care. I want to know what my options are.
Right, right, right. Do you think they were like freaked out by the by the prospect of that, or some, you know?
Well,
they were
let
just
me
busy?
Tell you my list of risks for that pregnancy.
Oh, okay. Well, there were other things then. Funny.
There were other things going on. It was kind of funny. I had the inverted T scar that was 8 centimeters. The vertical part was 8 centimeters long.
Yeah.
And my medical records, quote, extended well into the fundus, which I disagree with now. But I had an anterior placenta that was probably right on top of my scar.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
I was 35, 36, so approaching geriatric.
Sure, sure. Super ancient person there.
Yeah, right. And there was a couple of other things that I don't remember, but just, you know, hearing the scar on top of the inverted T, I think is what really scared a lot of people off.
Sure.
And finally, I got one midwife called me back, and she's like, yeah, we can do that. I've been doing VBACs since the 70s when they were all classicals. Don't worry about it. We got this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, interesting.
So I met with her and her partner, and I ended up hiring them, and I had a great birth. Everything was perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, it couldn't have gone any better.
That's wonderful.
And my placenta, I have very strange placentas, I've discovered. My placenta came out in pieces. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But at least it was reassuring to know that it was not adhered to my scar abnormally.
Sure, sure. Definitely no adherence there, huh?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful. So, wow, I think that's so inspiring. Again, I mean, women are probably not even considering they can have a vaginal birth, and then you went on to have a home birth, which is just really inspiring.
It wasn't a freestanding birth center because they were about an hour away from me, and they needed to be closer to their other clients.
Right.
But still, yeah, it wasn't a hospital birth center. It was, you know, completely unassociated with any hospital at all.
Mm-hmm.
With home birth midwives. So,
yeah, that's great. So, what do you do when women come your way and they're starting to learn, you know, sort of the truth that this is possible? Maybe they even know a little bit about, you know, physiological birth or whatever. How do you like assist them? I mean, is there sort of a network of people that you know that might help care for these women when they're having trouble finding somebody? Or do you just kind of...
I have a super secret list.
Yeah, that's great.
That nobody's allowed to see the whole thing but me.
Sure.
Because we're protective of our care providers, even the doctors, because we don't want them to be ostracized or penalized by their peers for helping us.
Sure,
so,
sure.
You
it's
know,
a political issue.
I keep a list.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it totally is a political issue.
Yeah.
Because there are some doctors out there who give women special scars just so they won't try to VBAC.
Yeah, we could
Seriously,
talk all day.
Seriously, I am not lying. People look at me like I am the biggest conspiracy theorist when I tell them that. I'm like, no, I have heard it from people who were sitting in their office. No.
Yeah.
I know
well,
it.
I mean, I don't doubt it at all. And I think, you know, for people that don't believe in that sort of thing, you just really have to reconsider every choice you get to make in your birth. You have to understand that you're the only one that cares as much as you do. I don't care what your situation is. I don't care if you've had a cesarean or not. I don't care if you have twins, breech, whatever. You are the only one that cares as much as you do. So you have to come to a place where you know what's best. And, you know, not every woman will attempt or want a vaginal birth, and that's fine too. It's just coming to the place where you know what's best for you, and then you can find somebody because you know as well as anybody. If you leave it up to a professional to tell you what to do, 99% of them are going to tell you you're nuts.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we do hear that a lot. And so usually when somebody is looking for a care provider, I ask them where they are and I check my list. And if I don't have anybody in their area, which I don't have coverage for all areas, which is unfortunate and frustrating, but right. You know,
well, you're working on it. I'm sure it'll come.
Oh, I am. Yeah. And I always remind them whenever they've had a good experience, even if they still end up with another cesarean, if they like their doctor or whatever, and they felt like they were treated with respect, I always ask them to send me their care provider's info so I can add it to my list.
Sure.
And in areas where we don't have anybody, I suggest, you know, trying all the home birth midwives if they're comfortable with the home birth idea. Mm-hmm. If they really want a hospital for the safety factor, you know, and I always do explain that it's some way.
Right.
Imaginary, you know, it's not. There isn't really any more safety in the hospital than there is at home. But, you know, I just suggest saying university hospitals would likely be open to it. And somebody in a small country hospital, you know, I live out in the middle of the country and all the hospitals have just complete VBAC bans because
right. Oh, you're cutting out a little bit. Can you hear me?
It's completely ridiculous because if, yeah, I can hear. Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's kind of cutting in and out.
Excuse me. Let me try moving. Is that better?
If I'm not echoing, it's better.
You're not echoing.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm in somewhat rural place too, and there's a VBAC. You know, they don't do VBACs at the hospital here either. So, right, it's weighing your risks and benefits of even, you know, going 2 hours away to, you know, quote unquote, mm-hmm. attempt a VBAC. That's a whole nother issue for sure.
Right.
So yeah. What about women that come to you and don't have anybody near them, you know, and are interested in having a free birth or an unassisted birth? Do you have specific resources for them or support for them?
We've had a few that had unassisted births. My last one was unassisted because I had moved farther away from those midwives.
Mm, okay.
And I couldn't find anybody in my new area that would support me.
Yeah.
So I started out that pregnancy with an OB CNM group. And actually, the OB and the one CNM were very nice and supportive. And I mean, they were hesitant, but they were like, well, you did it once already, so I think you should be okay. We don't know.
Right.
You know, but the other CNM was awful. She was so mean to me. And I was like, I can't imagine even laboring with her anywhere near me. So yeah, I'm just going to do this at home by myself. Thanks.
That's
bye.
That's awesome. You know, you gotta protect yourself. You know, nothing. I always say, I mean, you know, nothing's guaranteed in life or birth. And so why would you put yourself at risk by being afraid or at someone else's mercy, especially when they're so fearful? It's just that doesn't serve anybody in birth.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So, you know, we talk to them and we don't trying to think. Usually when women decide that they want to have an unassisted birth or a free birth and they usually go looking for outside sources. They'll find the other free birth groups because, you know, it's not at that point. Sometimes it can get a little difficult and we try to be very careful to make sure that nobody bashes any of the mothers in the special scars group for their choices.
Yeah.
But, you know, it can be tender and sensitive and hard. So, you know, sometimes they'll talk about it right on the group and that's fine. You know, I'll tell them about my experience and the other women who have had unassisted births will tell them about their experiences. Cause we've had quite a few now.
Yeah.
Usually if they have specific questions, they'll go outside of the group for that.
Sure.
Which is fine, you know, cause at that point it's not really a special scars specific question.
Right. Yeah, for sure. There's a lot involved there. I totally get that. It's just interesting that, well, I mean, any sort of high-risk pregnancy, you know, women have trouble finding somebody. So I would just think that, you know, there would be more, in a sense, women with special scars kind of considering that just because, like you said, you know, lots of care providers don't want to go there. So These women, mm-hmm. you know, on a whole, I would imagine are just, whether or not it's an unassisted birth or not, just even in their pregnancies, probably have to have a good deal more autonomy and all of that than sort of your average woman, you know, just if they're not feeling
absolutely.
Supported. Yeah. Yeah.
And the ones that want to have a VBAC really, really have to shore themselves up. You know, they have to be firm in their decision mm-hmm. because they'll get it from all sides, families, their partners, their, you know, their friends.
Sure.
I mean, I had a nurse friend of mine during my first VBAC pregnancy. She was terrified. And she talked to another nurse friend of mine, and my other nurse friend is totally awesome. And she was like, well, you know, I'm sure she's researched this, and she's making the best decision she can for herself. There's nothing we can do about it. It's her life, you know?
Right,
and I was like, yes, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. If only more people felt that way, right?
But, you know, I mean, you get it from the most unexpected places.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously that's for women, you know, just planning VBACs or, again, any high-risk mm-hmm. situation, is everybody wants to weigh in their 2 cents. So they do have to be really committed and strong and hopefully have support, because that's, you know, that's rough.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of great resources on Jessica's site, which is specialscars.org. And I've enjoyed reading through there as far as things to consider before attempting a VBAC with a special scar. Just more information and support and studies as well. So any sort of last words or advice you would have for somebody that does have a special scar just when they, you know, are considering getting pregnant again or do get pregnant again, any words of wisdom for them?
Don't settle. You know, when you're looking for a care provider, make sure that it's one that you feel comfortable with, that you really believe is going to help you get a VBAC if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. 'Cause provider sabotage makes me so sad, and I see it too much.
Yeah, I bet.
So, you know, just that, and educate yourself, because if you educate yourself, a lot of them will be more likely to assist you, or at least not try to scare you out of it. Because they know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
that's great advice for anybody, really. I mean, the more we know, the more confident we'll be, and you know, less likely to be bulldozed, and more likely to, you know, make the right choices for you, really.
Mm-hmm. And then, no matter what the outcome is, you knew every step of the way that you had a say in it, and you were in charge, and you were still calling the shots.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, I love to hear it. That's exactly what we attempt to communicate as well here at Indie Birth. So I love that you are on the same page and that you have just a special place in your heart and are doing all this hard work for this specific group of women. So thank you so much, Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'll be really helpful for people to hear.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Join us on our other podcasts. You can find them on indiebirth.com, as well as blog posts and lots of classes. Our 5-week class is called How to Have an Indie Birth, and that can be done all online. So visit us, and thanks for listening.